Blog Talk Radio.
This is what it is, okay? I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos, where no time and space to exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a locker.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, folks. This is the midweek. And certainly, it's the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, as always, as ever, 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. We have a lot to get to. Let's go to a quick urban alternative, black rock, psychedelic soul, Afro-punk groove. This is Queensbred, Pharoah March, Dream, featuring Talib Kweli. A few expletives, folks. I don't have the editing equipment quite yet, so excuse the expletives, but appreciate the groove and the message. We'll be right back.
Pull myself together. Put on a new face. I've got dreams, yeah, dreams to remember. Yeah, yeah, I've got dreams, old dreams to remember. Help me out.
Yo, my destiny rules everything around me. Dream, get the money, dollar bill, y'all. Everybody put their palms in the clouds. Get your hands in the sky, it's not a problem to feel, y'all. Even if I broke as fuck, I would lend you my last so you can holler at me still. PMC in the place to be. On the MIC, still spittin' that real. Yo, you know the limerick's a limit. Let's not limit to intimate, but increments of infinite potential in the scene. You can benefit from getting off of the internet for just a minute. It's a simple song you can sing off memory. Mimic it when it hits the spirit, it pulls the heartstrings. Infamous and kindred, it's intrinsic when it's still enough from the genesis when we remember to dream. Just dream. That means you. My determination runs every aspect mentally, I'm no dummy. Scholar got skill, yeah. Can't take what I visualize from it. You pull the wool over my eyes, I swallowed the red pill. Even if eyes broke as fuck, I would lend you my last, you can holler at me still. Everybody put your paws in the cloud, get him up in the sky, it's not a problem to feel. Welcome to the age of Aquarius and the stages of various schemes. Vicariously I skate when I dream, each scene should win an academy. Put it up on the screen, my strategy, Pharaoh's the king of queens. Who fiends for team? you with is the new theme music. Use it to shape their futures when they daydream to it. Never elusive, never claim stupid. Loose it, boost your acoustics when you sing to it. And just dream.
You know I'm downright excellent about my spill to get the money.
Dollar, dollar bill, y'all.
I got dream. Strung out on the music, so I'm sorta like a dealer to a junkie.
Swallow that pill, y'all.
Sometimes it rains in Southern Cali and Philadelphia ain't always sunny.
Just keeping it real, y'all.
Talib Kweli in the place to be. Yeah, you better believe.
Come on, let it know the deal,
yeah.
Y'all.
5 o'clock in the morning. Just getting home from last night's performance.
All right. Enough of that. Once again, the mighty Pharoah Monch, Dream featuring Talib Kweli, and that's the latest from his new download. I can't say LP or I guess we can still say CD. That's from PTSD, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. Pick it up. Definitely harkening back to real hip-hop, folks. There's a few authentic hip-hop albums still available, still being pressed or downloaded. So we will do our best to enlighten you and give you this information. All right, folks, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. Speaking of the man, Captain, you needed an engineering, and on the holodeck, how will you do it?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Okay, let me begin. Should I say, let the science lesson begin. Today, listeners, you're going to learn about fusion and fission reactions. And there's a reason why I'm doing this. And I'm going to use Hulk and Superman, something that you are familiar with, in order to bypass your defense mechanism to something that's convoluted. That's the trick. That's how anyone can learn anything, if you attach something familiar, something familiar. Now you might say, why is he doing this? Well, you have to remember, this is Afro Nerd. You have an Afro component. That's when we do all the emotional blackety-black stuff that makes everybody feel a certain way. Then there's a nerd component. You understand? And the two interact synergistically. In the nerd component, we talk about science. We'll talk about, you know, superheroes, even though that's mainly comic shop stuff, but we blur the lines here also at times. So Afro and nerd interact synergistically to raise each aspect to a higher level. So this is what you have to understand when you're dealing with the mind-brain interface. In the modern day era, in 2014, the mind-brain interface is damaged. What does that mean? You automatically resist things that are convoluted. Look up fluoride, and you realize fluoride was pioneered by the Germans, and see what it does to the brain. Look up GMO foods. Look up the Wi-Fi network and all the microwave stuff that's going through the air that's damaging you. Look up cell phone and brain damage, and you'll see why you're in this predicament in 2014. And you also get to see that I'm just not making this stuff up. So the way to learn things in 2014, and this has been explored by school practitioners and also scientists who have come up with different learning systems for people who they say, quote, unquote, cannot learn anything. You change the modus operandi of how whatever you want to learn is decanted into one's being, and all of a sudden, you begin to start to learn it, even though they'll say you don't have a high IQ. Now, this doesn't necessarily turn you into a Nikola Tesla. In order to be a Nikola Tesla, you need two things, very good DNA and the right environment. Environment is where you access things in order to learn. So it's the combination of the two interacting synergistically to turn you into a Nikola Tesla. But you don't have to be a Nikola Tesla in order to grasp the concept of science and mathematics. You only have to change the modus operandi of how it has been originally decanted into your being so you don't resist it. And that's what I'm doing here with something familiar with the Hulk and Superman. Everyone knows about the Hulk, and everyone knows about Superman. So follow me with this. Now let's talk about the Hulk. All right? And there's also something else with this, too. There was a fight between the Hulk and Superman that was done on the Internet, and it was done very good by some geeks. I don't remember exactly their names, but it looked pretty good, and the geeks are catching up with what comes on TV. And who knows, maybe eventually they'll catch up with what comes on in the movies, God forbid. So, and we also know there's been installments where they have fought in the past. But that's besides the point. Let's talk about the Hulk. We know the Hulk, the madder he gets, the stronger he gets. He's driven by rage. His rage drives his fission reaction within his body. That's the splitting of atoms, his gamma rays. And the madder he gets, the stronger he gets. The more fissioning is going on within him. Now, here's the ironic thing also. We also learn the madder that Hulk gets, the more rage he's filled with, the less you can reason with him. This is very key, okay, because there's something else that happens too with fission reactions. Now we have to go back in time, during Victorian times. During Victorian times, they used to bring people off the street. Can't do this now. It's totally illegal. But during those times, of course, you could do anything. And drug them up and watched, and they put their bodies on scales. And they would let the people who lived on the street, the bums, let them die. And what they found, 2 ounces left the body every time. They theorized that this 2 ounces was the soul component in human beings, your awareness. That's not my words. That's according to the Victorians. Later on, Russian research found that nuclear weapons destroyed souls. How did they know this? That's a whole other diatribe I'd have to tell you with that. How did they know this? That's according to their research, and you can look it up. They figured that nuclear weapons are anti-Higgs fields. Don't worry about the terminology. I'll explain it to you. Anti-Higgs fields just means you remove mass, energetic mass. Now I'm going to give you an analogy. You are already familiar with this energetic mass. How so, the captain? You've seen the Watchmen film. We all know about the great Dr. Manhattan. Dr. Manhattan is the Higgs field. That's what nuclear weapons remove. So now you have a visual picture. Now it can get past your natural defense mechanism because you are familiar with this. Dr. Manhattan is Higgs field, okay? Hulk, the madder he gets, actually the more tribal he gets. The fission reaction starts to destroy the soul component of the Hulk. So he gets more and more tribal. Your soul aspect. That is the reason why I'm telling you this. We have the Fukushima debacle. And because of the Fukushima debacle, you're going to see a phase change in humanity. What I like to call the Megyn Kelly effect. Remember Megyn Kelly when she said, well, you know, Santa Claus is white and Jesus is white. Forget about Santa Claus. Now, some people would say it was just a racist statement. Some people would say it's just a fun statement. But it could be due to the fact that the Fukushima now is starting to affect the soul component which pops individuals back to their tribal aspect, meaning which multiculturalism is a higher level of thinking. Tribalism is lower. We all come from somewhere else. If you live here and you see somebody who looks different, you automatically attack them because you feel they're invading the tribe. Now, that's why I'm explaining this with the Hulk. If I explain it to you directly, you would never get it. Say he's talking about souls, he's talking about Higgs fields and everything else. Your defense mechanism would say it's just a lot of malarkey. And being that you cannot do things convoluted in 2014, unless you change the modus operandi, I would be totally wasting my time. But because you know the Hulk, but because you know Dr. Manhattan, I can slip this into your subconscious and activate it later on as it begins to metastasize through your system and it filters into your consciousness. So when I do a diatribe later on Fukushima, you go, oh, that's what he was talking about pertaining to souls. So we know the Hulk gets matter, he gets stronger, and his soul component gets lower because he gets more tribal based on the research that's available out there. Now, let's talk about Superman. Superman is powered differently. It's not fission. It is fusion. That is the power of the sun. You are familiar with the sun. That is two atoms coming together, not splitting, coming together. Fission is splitting. Fusion is coming together. Coming together, the power of the sun. You are familiar with the sun, so it slips in, all right? You can't block this. You know this already. See how that is? You can't block this even if you wanted to. Slick, isn't it? Now, we know that a fusion reaction is 3 to 4 times more powerful than the fission reaction. So now, Superman versus the Hulk. We also know, if they were to battle, that a 30-year-old Superman is stronger than a 20-year-old Superman because he's had more time to absorb the fusion power of the sun. Two were to fight each other. A non-enraged Hulk, it would be safe to say that Superman, just from the start, if you wanted to play safe and not too ridiculous, is going to be 5 times more powerful than a non-enraged Hulk. But we also know the madder Hulk gets, the stronger he gets. And we also know an older Superman is going to be stronger than a younger Superman. All right, people? Now, in a battle between the two, I don't know who's going to win, but I use the diatribe in order to explain fusion and fissioning. And I slip this into your subconscious. So later on, when I tell you about Fukushima and what's going to eventually happen here on the planet Earth, you'll be able to get it, and it will not sound like I'm talking some strange out mathematics science stuff. That's why I did this. It's all about attaching something familiar. Back over to you, Seraphim Nerd. Let's go.
Always insightful, Captain, and very much apropos for a show called Afro Nerd, as you so aptly stated. We have a lot to get to, actually, this evening. Again, folks, this is the Midweek in Review edition of Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk. The call-in number, you should know it by now, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. Feel free to buzz on in. The water is always warm. We don't bite much. Your protestations, your questions, notations, whatever. Feel free to just come on in. First up, I'm jumping around a bit, Captain. Let's get into this Michael Sam affair.
All right.
Michael Sam, athlete, footballer, recently picked, I think he, what is his, 249th NFL pick for 2014, is that it?
Yes, sir.
I think the actual 249th, seventh round, for the St. Louis Rams. Well, you know what I'm going to say, ladies and gentlemen. This would have been something somewhat uneventful. It would have been. But we know that a few months ago it was disclosed that Mr. Sam is of an alternative lifestyle, that he is of the LGBT community. That's not anything to be worthy of ridicule. We don't really do that here on this show. We're more into the minstrel side of things. If you're a minstrel or really overtly embarrassing, we will call you out. But I'm forever honest on this show. And maybe my consciousness hasn't risen to the level, and maybe will never rise to the level, to be absolutely comfortable with public displays of affection, really across the board, but being absolutely honest, I'm a hetero guy. I'm a heterosexual. So obviously, if I kiss a woman, or if I see someone kissing a woman, if it's of an opposite nature, that's not really difficult to my senses. Obviously, it's very natural to me. But seeing two men, in the case of Michael Sam, he kissed, upon learning that he was picked for the Rams, he kissed his lover, his boyfriend, and mushed cake. I didn't see the whole thing. I only saw a glimpse of it, to be honest with you. But it caused a bit of a stir, because this is something that is to be expected. There is an effort to normalize gay culture, a really powerful, concerted effort to normalize the culture. And if it's going to be normalized, just as I said, it's normal for me to see a male kiss his girlfriend, the next step is you're going to be seeing more of this kind of thing. And it didn't really go over that well to other NFL cats, assumingly straight cats, because a few of them were suspended, reprimanded when they threw out tweets, such tweets saying horrible or disgusting. You got to keep your mouth shut, to be honest with you. If you're not comfortable with it, and as I said, I have to be honest, I'm not comfortable with it, but it's not my life. It's the way of things. It's the way of things. They're ushering this thing in. And when I spoke to the captain a few days ago, we were going back and forth about this thing. I'm always trying to figure out things logically and respectfully. At least I try to be logical and respectful. And I don't want to be. I don't want to be a biased person, especially being a black male of some intellect. Both of us, the captain and myself, I know the captain, I can't speak for the captain on everything, but I would assume we try to provide a reasoned answer for these things, a reasoned synopsis. But you also have to deal with what comes natural to you. Some things you're not going to be able to explain. There's a reason why the term queer has a double entendre sense to it. You know, queer many, many years ago, before it was used to describe someone who's gay, queer meant odd, strange, weird. Now we know it to mean something else, but it still means that, though. It still means that. And I think you're looking at something from our perspective. It comes off strange. So I'm going to turn the mic over to the captain, but the best way that I was able to figure this out to my comfort level, the best way for me to figure this out was people aren't playing. I don't think this is a joke for them. Some folks believe, and maybe the jury is still out, that this behavior is something that can be controlled and that it's a choice. I'm not so sure about that, because we see in this country that gay folks have been attacked. They've been killed. All kinds of all kinds of reactions, many not favorable. Just as a black person cannot choose, or any minority can choose to be their ethnicity, their phenotype, and their coloring. We've seen we've seen imagery and YouTube footage. You can go to YouTube now, ladies and gentlemen, and you see in some countries, some African countries, some Caribbean countries, it is pretty much an allowed thing to attack someone who is suspected of an alternative lifestyle. And these folks have been publicly beaten, publicly burned. You wouldn't want to wish that on your greatest enemy. But I will say, for things to make sense to me in a Western world, to make sense, black folks, I'm talking about black men now, and I don't want to be tribal all the time, but I will go into it. We have got to shore up, and listen to me very closely, we have got to make a concerted effort to shore up traditional black masculinity. It comes off as if you are seeing this agenda being pushed through the prism of a black face. A black face, and we've seen this in many other things. When an agenda is being set, the black man is oftentimes, and black woman, but I'm saying black man in this case, maybe the black man before a black woman, the black man is used as the test guinea pig for many things, positively and negatively. But in this case, it seems to be more, when they want to push an agenda, you have to attach a black face to it. We see Michael Sam before him. We see Kirk, who's the gentleman? Jason Collins.
Yes.
You know, I'm not comfortable with black masculinity being jeopardized. I think traditional black masculinity should be paramount. And this should not be in any way to discredit what these folks want to do. I don't have any control over them. It's not my life. But I do know that there seems to be a diminishment in traditional black masculinity. That should not have to fall by the wayside because of Mr. Sam's agenda, or some who would think that he has an agenda. Maybe he doesn't, but it comes off that way. So he's allowed to do, it's a free country, as uncomfortable as it may be to many of us, to our sensibilities that don't understand this, we're going to have to deal with it. And respectfully, we're going to have to deal with it. To deal with it, I think, black boys have to have black fathers in the household, Captain. Black daughters have to have black fathers in the household. Young women, wives, mothers, they need males there. And our communities are suffering because we do not seem to have a strong black male template. That's missing. The type of black men that the captain and myself, and I'm sure shouting out Sergio Mims and some of our stalwart listenership, because I know Sergio specifically, if I remember correctly, I believe his father was a police officer, and he often has a great deal of admiration for a lot of the blaxploitation cinema from the 70s, a la Jim Brown, Fred Williamson. Those kind of men were our template. You factor in folks like Jim Brown, Lew Alcindor, a.k.a. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, our parents, obviously my father, Kirk's father, Sidney Poitier, Paul Robeson, Jackie Robinson, there was no wiggle room. There was no wiggle room. Adam Clayton Powell Jr., Dr. King, Malcolm X, I can go on and on. Even some of the black radical folks that I may not jive with today, jive with today politically, I have admiration from a historical perspective of the Stokely Carmichaels and the H. Rat Browns for what they stood for at that moment in time. But you had unflinching black masculinity. Unflinching. And it cannot be a mistake that we do not see that type of black masculinity that is murky. We have a murky kind of black masculinity. So to wrap this up, and I want the captain, I'm really intrigued to see what he has to say about this. To wrap this up, ultimately, I wish Mr. Sam success, luck, but you know what? We have to have an agenda. I'm not going to say a competing agenda. I'm not going to put it that way. But I think this would be a lot less awkward if you had some strong black men handling affairs. And this is not even to discount President Obama. He's only one gentleman. But we have to have an agenda. We have to have an agenda, and it appears to have been lost. Whereas many years ago, I don't recollect having these imagery in black males holding it down. That's it. Captain, any thoughts?
See, this is why we interact synergistically. You handled that side of it beautifully. All right? Now I got to handle this side, which will interact synergistically with what you said to raise the whole total overall whole to a higher level. Now, here's my problem with the whole Michael Sam thing. You go put in Google, you can't even get to the football aspect. They're talking about his sexual preference. That's what everything's about today. You know? Let's talk about the football. Now, this is something you have to realize with the NFL. We know it's a sport. And it seems like sports now is a new religion because you pour into all your emotion into it. But just like when you go for a job, they look at your resume, they look at your education, look at your experience, and based on that, and also if you're a right fit for the company, that's part of it too, your personality and everything else. Do people like you? Sometimes it's a yes, sometimes it's a no, based on all that information I just said. Now, let's look at Michael Sam's football resume. But before I get to his football resume, let's back up a bit. Let me give you a few other people. The great quarterback, Joe Montana, was drafted in the third round. Not a first-round draft pick, 82nd pick in 1979. He is a quarterback. Joe Montana went on to win 4 Super Bowls, a total beast at the game of football. Tom Brady, Patriots quarterback. He went in the 6th round. A lot of people don't know that. All right? He was, the 196th pick, and he won 3 Super Bowls. 6th round. A great Tom Brady. That's why he's very humble also. You know, I remember one time, this is a sidebar, he had said, you know, we don't hear you complaining about money and everything else. And you know what he said? This was years ago before he got the really big contract. He had said, look, man, I was a 6th-round draft pick. I could be working a job for 50 grand somewhere. That's the reality of it, you know? So what if I get an extra million on my contract? Pay that to someone else so we can win a Super Bowl. That's Tom Brady. Now let's go on to Richard Sherman. You know who Richard Sherman is? Richard Sherman is the very good, can't call him great yet, it's too early. He does have a Super Bowl ring, though. The very good defensive back for the Seahawks. Okay, to the uninitiated, the defensive backs, they cover the wide receivers. They're normally the smaller guys. Okay? He went in the 5th round, right? So he's doing very well. very well. Also went to a very good college also, Stanford. Now, let's look at some of his combine. When you go to combine, NFL combine, they test you. The things called the 40-yard dash, the vertical jump, and at times the bench press. Richard Sherman, who weighs only 195, was able to do 16 reps with 225. His vertical jump was 38 inches. Very good. That's very good. When I was a young man, I did 39, for whatever it's worth. That's very good. Okay? His 40-yard dash, he ran in 4.54 seconds. Legitimate speed for a smaller man. Now, let's look at Clowney, the first overall pick in the NFL draft. Clowney, who will be playing defensive end at the Texans, is 6'5", 266 pounds. He runs the 40-yard dash in 4.5. Now you know why he went in the first round. His vertical jump is 37.5 inches. He has a small man vertical jump at 266 pounds. Now, let's look at Michael Sam. Problem now. Remember, I said this is a resume. It's a resume, just like going into a job. Michael Sam is 6'2", 261 pounds. 40-yard dash was a dismal 4.91 seconds. His vertical jump was 25.5 inches. I could do that. I could go higher than that right now. You understand? And I'm past my prime. I'm pretty sure I could still probably do about 28 inches. No problem. Pretty sure. You know? That's dismal. So he was drafted in the seventh round. Now, looking at the football resume, there's a high probability that he doesn't necessarily make the team. That's the real story. That's the real story. You understand? And that's what we need to be talking about when it comes to Michael Sam. Does he have what it takes to play at the NFL? And looking at his prerequisites, looking at his courses here, it's like, no, you really don't. He really shouldn't be getting a shot. So, you know, it looks a little suspect. Let's just see how this plays out. And I hope, and let me change that from hope. Let me say this. If he doesn't make it, I hope people don't come out. I went back to hope. I hope people don't come out and say, well, it's because he's gay. If he doesn't make it, it's because his football skills and his prerequisites were not up to snuff. Has nothing to do with his sexuality. And this needed to be stated loud and clear. And that's why I gave you the statistics. It always comes back to the statistics. People don't like statistics because statistics kill the emotional response. Statistics are like, shut up. Be quiet. This is what happened here. These are the facts. So everyone shut up, and let's just see how this plays out. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
As always, you know, you reminded me of something. I failed to – and that's why you're here, obviously, to shore me up, because we did discuss some of this behind the scenes. We're going to go to a quick groove in a moment, ladies and gentlemen. But you did remind me that Mr. Sam threw out Mr. Sam and Mr. Collins, truth be told, threw out their sexuality, threw it out there, media-wise, made it known, came, quote-unquote, out in a way that comes off as if it was political maneuvering. They threw out a political flare. It's like you're trapped on an island and you see a rescue boat and you throw out a flare, you ignite a flare. They threw out a flare, a preemptive strike, and now it's the political to me based on what you said. And no one's really... For whatever reason, ladies and gentlemen, and the captain, for whatever reason, I don't see too many media outlets attacking it from that angle when you just laid out the statistic, laying out his specs, his stats. I mean, it's about whether you can compete or not. Is that what BA always says? Can you compete?
Yes, sir.
Can you compete? So,
yes, sir.
If Jason Collins was really at the tail end of his career, throwing out the sexual card, the sexuality card, seems to have extended it. And we're talking about potentially millions of dollars based on extending your career by a couple of years in his case. And in the case of Mr. Sam, he really wasn't up for consideration until he threw that out. And now, as a political matter of political maneuvering, now these teams have to consider this sexual card, sexuality card, because, well, we can't – well, first of all, he's going to put butts in seats because this is going to be somewhat of a spectacle. And also, we don't want to be accused of being biased because of his sexuality. And these gentlemen, I believe, sincerely knew what they would do. They knew they did not really have it. So the maneuvering makes it disingenuous. That is what makes it problematic over everything. But I still hold very steadfast to the notion that this is a complex issue because you have the qualification aspect along and being tribal in this sense and image, and as far as image is concerned, that we are seeing more and more people of color, especially black males being used to usher in an agenda. And I'm saying I've just given up in the sense that these people aren't playing. They're not going to give up. As much as I'm reticent of making a comparison between, and many folks do not like the comparison between the black civil rights movement and what's going on with the LGBT community, I'm beginning to be more honest and say, it's coming off as if we are seeing some commonalities. If you go back to some of the language that the majority culture, that white racists, those who were white and empowered 50, 60, 70 years ago, they spoke about black folks and minorities, and they're still doing it. And they're still doing it a la Donald Sterling. But you heard far more of it, far more of it, and it was socially acceptable 50 or 60 years ago. So when Mr. Dynamo, our friend in the chat room, says that he thought that my diatribe was very nuanced, it's nuanced because I like logic, I like reasoning, and I also know the reality of the situation. I can rail about alternative lifestyles, but it's not going to change anything. The best thing that I see that we can do is to shore up and really define and get behind and usher in the notion of traditional black masculinity. That's all. That's all I'm asking for. These children, male and female, they need strong male role models. We need to have a defined sense of masculinity, especially with a black or brown face attached to it. And it should not be the sole face of a male in a dress. We can't leave that to be the sole or predominant definer of black masculinity, because that is happening. Shouting out Mr. Starks, who is a administrator in the Nassau public school system, and he is seeing fathers in drag dropping off their children. This is for real. I'm not passing any judgment. I'm just putting out there, he's seeing more and more of that, more and more of confused black males and females, but more black females at a very young age, and he's scratching his head because he doesn't know what this is. I don't know what it is, but I do know that traditional black masculinity should at least be in the mix and promoted. If this is being promoted, then that has to be promoted. That's all I'm saying. That's it. Let's go to a quick groove. When we get back, folks, you know, I don't really want to talk about the affairs of minstrels. I don't. But even the great Afro Nerd Radio Show, a.k.a. Afro Nerd featuring Captain Kirk, even our broadcast has to capitulate to minstrel nonsense. But we're going to be very terse about this. This is Jay-Z and Solange and Beyonce Knowles. We're going to talk about it for a moment. Right before this broadcast, I was listening to conservative business person, conservative pundit, conservative talk show host Armstrong Williams. And even on his show, they were just discussing this nonsense. So I said, okay, if Armstrong Williams is devoting some time to the discussion about minstrel, private minstrel nonsense, so should the Afro Nerd. So we're going to get into that briefly. It is what it is, folks. You can tell by my comportment. Whatever. All right. This is You Put the Flame on It. You Put the Flame on It, the great Charles Bradley. We'll be right back. Let's groove. Certainly, Cass, certainly, always give me the best of urban alternative groove. Classic funk, although that is a relatively new record, that's from the revivalist soul faction of urban alternative music. That was the great Charles Bradley. Definitely a force, signed to Daptones Records. You know him. Very phenomenal singer. He's been around since the 70s or late 60s, actually. But, you know, sometimes these folks, you know, you get discovered even if you're like 60-something years old. It happens when it happens. But Charles Bradley is definitely a phenomenal singer and harkens back to an Otis Redding type of vibe. So, again, folks, Charles Bradley, you put the flame on it. Getting back into the fold, right before the break, we were talking about this. I barely want to talk about it because, to me, I'm at my wit's end with the public's the public's thirst for dealing with folks that are living in a fishbowl. That's number one. I mean, you're getting paid millions of dollars. Well, this is what it is, Cass. Let's keep it 100, as we always say. We give folks.
Good.
This is not the Steve Harvey show, and folks know I have a thing about just certain radio personalities and their gigs, and we're not paying close attention to what we are ingesting. And this kind of stuff, it's just minutia. It's a waste of time. And for those who've been living under a rock for the last couple of days, I mean, this has been big news. This has been big news, Captain. I mean, really big news. The cover of many major local newspapers. This should not rate. Somehow it rates. But for those who may not know what's going on, Solange Knowles, a singer who probably would fit in under the urban alternative category. She's not doing what her sister's doing. I think we might have a couple of Solange Knowles cuts in our roster, actually. She's been on OKPlayer.com, the Roots website. You know, she's got her own thing because, let's face it, it's going to be very hard to compete with Beyonce Knowles. It's just the way things are set up. I can't even say she's not as talented as Beyonce. But just like Diana Ross received so many accolades and so much attention when she was with the Supremes, you know, when someone decides you are the chosen one, everybody has to fall to the side. So that's, you know, Kelly Rowland and Solange notwithstanding. Not that she wasn't a part of Destiny's Child, but, you know, I think she's fetching. She's kind of an Afro nerd style type of chick. I'll say that physically. But she showed out a couple of days ago. That's not an Afro nerd comportment style. She attended some kind of designer function at the Met Gala after party. I think it was some kind of designer thing on behalf of Rachel Roy. So she was there in attendance, both Knowles, the Knowles sisters, and their entourages, and Jay-Z, Sean Carter. There's footage of a dust-up between Solange Knowles and Jay-Z. And Jay-Z was not the aggressor. Solange Knowles, from what we're hearing, might have been tipsy, might have been inebriated. And she got rather violent with Jay-Z to the point of spitting on him, trying to slap him, trying to kick him. A security guard intervened, and then you saw that they tried to gain some kind of comportment when they left the function, and allegedly or reportedly they went in separate directions. That Solange ended up going in a limousine with her sister, and the Beyonce, and then Jay-Z went another way, and he was allegedly going to a Rihanna function. And then now we're hearing that Solange was angry. This is just, again, this is hearsay. She was asking of Jay-Z, why don't you go home? Why aren't you going home? Why don't you go home with your wife? So we don't know what's going on. I just know that the fascination of a dust-up between a sister-in-law and her sister's husband, I mean, as her sister's husband, I mean, if this was anybody else, this wouldn't be anything. And I'm just disturbed that we seem to be paying attention to minstrels. Jay-Z makes nigga music. Beyonce, I mean, none of these people are very well educated. I know I always emphasize education. We understand that we have heads of state and those who have doctorates that sometimes go into a quote-unquote ratchet modality. Sometimes it happens. You know, it happens, but to me, this is maybe me being biased on the rare occasion. I just have an issue with folks that really, I don't think they don't know what is, Captain. I spoke to the Oracle, and I'm gonna have you weigh in your own inimitable style. You know at the core of this, and I want the audience to kind of answer me on this either through email. Or you can call in again, 646-915-9620. And I don't want to belabor this too much because, you know, this is just minstrel nonsense. These folks do not make me proud to be black. They don't add to my pride level. They just don't. Now, when I think of folks, and I'm talking about irrespective of what they did personally, I'm talking about their image. Even the folks that didn't necessarily push a quote-unquote black agenda, it's something about their presence, persona, even though it may not have been a blatant black persona, like, you know, with a black fist. They engendered black pride. And these folks do not do that for me. And I don't understand why or why not. You know, when I think of Harry Belafonte, I know that's just ridiculous to even mention some of these people. They're giants. But these are the people that really were of the Oracle's time, but they transferred to me. But I'm thinking about when you tally, Captain, some of the great sports heroes and the politicians and the entertainers of old, and I'll mention them again: Paul Robeson. You think of Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis. I mean, you know, we talk about iconic black folks, and what it's just that even on an entertainment level, the Nicholas Brothers, Lena Horne. Miles Davis. And Miles Davis was crazed at times. That's because 100. It's still something about their representation on the outside, something about their representation and their energy toward their fan base or energy toward the black community. The energy toward the black community, Captain, seemed to be more pro-black. Without always saying it. And I don't feel anything for this crop of people that are supposedly none of these Real Housewives, none of these hip-hop, loving hip-hop people. I mean, the whole crew, aside from just a select few, none of them engender black pride or give any kind of connection to the black community or black soul sustenance. The core of black definition for me growing up, this is someone calling himself the Afro Nerd, was soul. Soul Train, Don Cornelius. You look at the old footage of Soul Train, ladies and gentlemen, you, Stevie Wonder, all these folks, there was a chief component, a chief black core. That is missing. So when I see the minstrel crew do what they do, I feel nothing. That's it. I'm not going to waste any more time on this. What are your thoughts, Captain?
Well, you have to understand these people are the products of the environment. The environment creates the type of individuals that we need at the given time. We're in a menstrual environment, and we're also in a victimization culture where the majority of these black people and a lot of the liberal white people feel that, you know, we're the total victim. So, meaning which, pull yourself up from the bootstraps. We don't do what our predecessors did, who were squeezed into a reality which created a different environment. So we had different leaders. We had different leaders from our athletes, our singers, our political rights people. It was entirely different because it was a different reality. Environment is entirely different. So you have different individuals at this given time. That's the face of victimization culture, the face of menstrual culture, and the two interact synergistically with each other, victimization and menstrual. Yourself and me, we're caught in between. We're from like a different time zone because we have the education of our predecessors from our fathers, and we were able to see what it was from that environment. And that's how you know that this environment at this given time is totally off, and you're totally not feeling it. I don't feel it either. But I just recognize what it is, and hopefully we can move through it and we can get back to the timeline like how our predecessors were able to do and use some of the opportunities that we have in victimization culture. You understand? So, you know, what you have now back directly over to Solange Knowles, you just have a woman, you know, going a little bit crazy, being emotional. I don't know exactly what Jay-Z told her, and she overreacted, and they got caught. I think your fishbowl statement is paramount. That's very good. You have to run with that because that's exactly what it is. They got caught in the fishbowl, and as you see a fishbowl, you know, the fish go by, everybody's watching as you go in an aquarium. Wow, look at the fish, look at the fish. That's what happened right here. So that's just the reality of it. They got caught with their pants down. Let's move past it. Next week, we'll have the next menstrual of the week, and we'll be talking about that. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Two things, then we're going to move along. I just thought of something. One, you know, when I use the term fishbowl, I mean, it's something that's been out there. So it's a kind of a tropey thing to say. That's what celebrity culture has been likened to for many years. But I think it has been intensified as of late because of technology, and Lord knows where we will go from here. It's already at an Orwellian stage where we, you know, to me, because of the quality of the individuals that we're looking at, we are grading bowel movements. This is the equivalent. This is what it is, Captain. This is what we're doing. You know, whatever that person ate that morning, we know what they're doing. We're almost at the stage where we're rating the quality of bowel movement with the crop that we've been given as far as entertainment. So that's one matter. And I got to straighten out Stahl. I think I'm pronouncing his name correctly. S-T-A-Y-L. He says, Jim Brown's – I'm at the chat room, ladies and gentlemen. It says, Jim Brown's sense of awareness is positive, but his treatment of women is questionable. Not exactly sure about him as a shining example of black masculinity. Let me straighten you out a little bit, Stahl. I never said that these people have to be perfect. And we know there's been this murkiness with Jim Brown and how he treats his women, throwing them off balconies, whether that's true or not. That's always been kind of a thing out there. There's always something, he, you know, when he was younger, there's always something about him mixing it up with women in his personal life. But I'm going beyond that. I'm talking about image. As far as Jim Brown's image on the screen, listen, I have on DVD 100 Rifles. Okay, I put things very straight and plain. In 1967, which I believe that movie came out, we see a strong black man kissing fine-ass Raquel Welch. I didn't see the film, I didn't see the film at that time, obviously. But I saw it in syndication, and I have it on DVD today. And in 67, that was what black masculinity was. In 2014,
we see Michael Sam kissing his boyfriend. I rest my case. I rest my case. Jim Brown was Jim Brown and other athletes during the mid-60s, I think it was Lew Alcindor, now Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, Jim Brown, I think it was three, maybe, oh, I think Bill Russell. Four black athletes got together for a business initiative for the black community. It was something that was groundbreaking. You can go to YouTube and look this up. Now, can you, this is around 65. This is right before, because Jim Brown retired as a very young man. He retired at 29. But these gentlemen had enough foresight, insight, cultural grounding, and consciousness to think of a business initiative for the black community many years before they were before athletes were commanding the 7 and 8 figure salaries that they are able to have today. The athletes I mentioned, if you put them in today's dollars, then if you think of Bill Russell, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Muhammad Ali, and Jim Brown, and you put them in 2014 dollars, what are you talking about? Billions, as far as athletic prowess equaling money. So I have to give Jim Brown respect because he has the AmeriCan program. Not a perfect individual, but as far as masculinity, standing up, speaking straight in your face, not being murky, unwavering, stalwart, that's the man. And he showed it by kicking ass, badassery, as far as black male conduct and strength was on screen. And plus he put his tongue down Raquel Welch's throat. That's enough. Damn it. Don't test me on this. That's what I remember as a kid. That had an effect on me. Jim Kelly, I'm talking about a little kid. Jim Kelly, all these people, the late Jim Kelly, badassery. No question marks. Because we're Generation X, folks. People born between 1965 and 1980. That's Generation X. We're the generation before these millennials, these confused types. You have Kanye West. You don't have the answers. You don't have the answers. Come on. It is what it is. That's it. Any thoughts on that, Captain? I mean, I'm thinking I'm being very clear on this.
Well, you said it. You nailed that one down.
There's Raquel Welch and some diminutive male. You know, my tongue is down Raquel Welch's throat. I'm just being honest. Maybe even present day. She ain't looking that bad. She's holding up. Maybe even present day. I'm just putting it out there. Take a look at her. She's holding up. All right. 646-915-9620. 646-915-9620. Where's Mr. Mims on this? Mr. Mims would have lit the stage on Jim Brown. He loves Jim Brown.
Yep.
For real. All right. You know, real quick, we're going to get into this more deeply for Saturdays. And mind you, it is coming up, folks. Our Grindhouse show, The Uncanny Daryl B, where we get into really deep, deep sci-fi comic book fantasy discussions. I just threw it out there. You know, S and giggles, PCs and giggles, as you say, Captain. Did you get a chance to check out Zack Snyder's photos of the Batfleck suit? I'm saying that in a funny way. But, you know, the updated Batman costume that he's going to be wearing, as well as a glimpse of the Batmobile. Did you see that?
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on that? We're going to get into it more deeply, but...
Well, I thought the suit looked pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought the suit looked pretty good. Yeah. The car looks pretty good, too. You know, even though they didn't give you a glimpse. They didn't give you the whole car, though. They gave you the glimpse. They had the cover over it.
You kind of got an idea, though.
Yeah. Suit looks good, though.
You know, well, he's buffed out. I mean, I think some of that is the suit, but it looks legit though. It doesn't look campy.
He's gonna need more than that if he has to fight Superman.
at least he looked like he could kick some behind.
Yes.
You know, now what he's got to do is come in with that intellect and that 10 steps or 20 steps ahead thinking, like a Robert Downey Jr. in the Sherlock Holmes reboots. That's it. We'll talk about this on Saturday, but I just wanted to ask your opinion. I'm throwing it out there. All right. Quickly, we never really got a chance to talk about this Bring Back Our Girls campaign, this tragic kidnapping that occurred by allegedly or reportedly by the Boko Haram Muslim faction, terrorist faction in Nigeria. And I think initially 300-plus girls were taken or kidnapped from schools. Some escaped. I think upwards of 50 were able to escape. Did anyone pass on? I think maybe two might have been killed. I'm not sure about that. I hope weren't any deaths. I hope not. But I do know that about 50 escaped. There's still 200-plus that are still under the heel of these monsters. And we can really take some different angles, because now what we're hearing is, you know, we see that FLOTUS, the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, is being somewhat critiqued because she has this hashtag campaign, Bring Back Our Girls. There's a picture of her that's put out there in the media and that's been tweeted with her simply, you know, with a dour face, a dour countenance, and she's holding up a sign that says "Bring Back Our Girls," hashtag Bring Back Our Girls. And listen, I am a conservative, but I'm not an ideologue, as I say all the time. This should be above politics, and this is what's causing folks to have even less of a respect for some of the conservatives and conservative movement, that they politicize everything that the Obamas do. And this is not to be politicized. Ann Coulter, you know, who is really just a blot on society. I have no love for Ann Coulter, conservative or not. She's an opportunist. She's a provocateur. You know, she's mastered it. She's mastered, you know, she knows what to say to tick people off in order to sell a book. She says she tried to channel Mrs. Obama's campaign, and she had a hashtag that said "Bring Back Our Country," and she's been clowned on that. It didn't really work the way she thought it was going to work. Now she's being memed all over the place. She's being clowned, and appropriately so, because this is above all of that. This is above all of that. Did you hear anything? I'm going to play a clip. Did you hear anything about some folks critiquing, again on the right, critiquing Mrs. Obama in making this tribal, that she's only pushing this because they're black girls? Did you hear anything about that?
Yes, I heard that. I also heard that you don't have to put up your hashtags, you don't have to put up pictures, because you are the president's wife. If you want to go get these kids, you can just tell the president to go in there and go get them. I heard that also, too. You know, it's the same, you know.
You can't just go into a sovereign country and just,
absolutely,
you know what I mean?
You're right.
You know, come on.
You're absolutely right.
in theory, anyway. They've got to ask for help. I don't think Nigeria is at that point yet. Maybe you will be. So I will say this: I have grave difficulty with this social media culture. It's a boon and a bane. I think it's more of a bane, actually, in some respects. A cheapening. One can make the argument that it is called a cheapening of protest. That, you know, protest is supposed to really be, you got to get out there, you got to show your face, you have to be busy. You have to be functional. now you're protesting from the strokes of a keyboard. So that's out there. You know, that might be a legitimate complaint. But at the same time, with the Arab Spring from a year ago, a year and a half ago, social media seems to have an effect. You know, maybe this is a generational thing, that folks are motivated by social media. Somehow it just works out that way, time we're living in. I see Black Achievement says, Pakistan is a sovereign country, didn't stop us from doing a flyby on bin Laden. Well, you know, that's true, too. That's true, too. Hey, listen, you got to pick your country. I don't know. That's a difficult one. We don't know. I mean, that's still in play. That is still in play. There might even be some kind of financial element in this also. They may have to come to the point where we might have to. And listen, we've bribed people in Pakistan also. There's some bribing going on, too. Now, no one talks about that. American money goes far. So I'm a bit confused on it. While I look for this clip, Captain, what are your thoughts on this tragedy?
Well, this is what you have to understand when you're dealing with the media. The media has a tendency, not all the time, but I would say most of the time, 95% truth, 5% lie. And that 5% distorts the whole 95% that they give you. In other words, follow the money trail on this situation. You might not like what you see. As I said before, when we had all of these countries, Muslim countries, going crazy all at once, and the wage slave zombies felt, oh, they were just oppressed, they're suppressed. The captain says they've been oppressed and suppressed for generations. Why are they all going crazy now? And then it comes out the CIA were formulating terrorist groups in these countries to destabilize these countries. So in a situation like this, you have to follow the money trail. That doesn't mean that there is not radical Muslims that operate on their own. It doesn't mean that. Yes, of course. But the first thing you have to do is do your due diligence. Follow the money trail, which is not hard to do. And then you might not like what you see. And then what you turn around and see that the whole thing is a farce, that's misdirection. So we have to be careful. We have to be very careful. Now, I'm not saying that at this time that it is misdirection. Obviously, these kids are missing. But who and what is behind this is up in the air. That's all I'm saying at this given time. Follow the money trail. Follow the money trail. Back over to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Well, let's go to a few moments of the Young Turks unpacking this, and then we will move along. You know, I said the last show, when we were at the tail end of this, we didn't quite get a chance to really get into this discussion. But, you know, also at the core of this, it's this religion or religiosity, whether it's Islamic, whether it's Christian, this is at the core of my issues with religion. Now, look what religion, and these folks, when you hear them talk, you're hearing the threats and what they're doing. They're threatening to put these young girls into a slave trade kind of thing, sex slave trade, and that their God tells them that they're told from a divine, this is appropriate. I mean, this is what at the core gets me about what kind of God would allow this, or I wouldn't say allow, but what kind of God would someone believe that this is appropriate? And this is just this one situation. It could be any religion. The bastardization of religion is what I find offensive. And you can really underwrite anything, any aberrant behavior you can underwrite, as long as it's written in some Bible or you interpret it that way. It's disgusting. This is why I leave it alone. This is where I'm agnostic, pure logic. I got to be about science and empirical data, as the captain is always referencing. I can't do this. If it's not this, it's something else, someone else. We saw, what was that Christian church, I say in quotes, Captain, the one, the Westboro Baptist Church, where they would boycott funerals. You know, people are going to funerals and they're trying to mourn, and these fools are protesting you. You know, burning Korans to start some stuff. And their religion tells them to do this. I mean, you know, a religion that's been bastardized to commit evil acts. I mean, it's absurd. It's equally as if I say this as a joke, but it's really true. If I believe that Jor-El, my god Jor-El from the planet Krypton, told me to behead someone, he told me to do that. It's written in issue action number 237. I mean, you know, it's equally as absurd based on make-believe. People throw out biblical history as if it is like American history or something that's truly tangible. It is make-believe, and people are dying because of make-believe. All right, that's it. Let's go to this Young Turks thing for a few moments, and then we'll try to get in one more topic before we move along. Young Turks on Boko Haram. Excuse me, Boko Haram. Hold on.
The leader of Boko Haram in northern Nigeria has released an hour-long video where he does admit to kidnapping nearly 300 girls from their schools and attempting to sell them off as slaves for $12 each. Now, the video is absolutely disgusting. We'll play it as B-roll for you guys as I read some of the statements that he makes in the video. He says, they are slaves and I will sell them because I have the market to sell them, indicating that there are people that are very much willing to buy these girls and treat them as slaves. And he also says, what do you know about human rights? You're just claiming human rights abuses, but you don't know what it is. I think kidnapping nearly 300 girls and selling them off as slaves is a human rights abuse. And he also makes the argument that, you know, in times of war, if young girls are kidnapped and they're used as slaves, it's absolutely okay to have sex with them under their religion, which is just, I mean, it's amazing to me that they think that they have any sense of morality when they're hurting these completely innocent girls. Now, the government claims that they're attempting to find these girls, but there's also a little bit of miscommunication between the First Lady and local authorities and also the media. The First Lady is denying that these girls have been kidnapped by Boko Haram. In fact, she claims that these are all made-up lies in order to make the government look bad. One thing that will make the government look bad is if you deny that these girls have been kidnapped. And so we'll see how this goes, but the U.S. government has said that they want to aid Nigeria in finding these girls. It's an absolutely depressing and shocking story.
Yeah, she, you know, the First Lady of Nigeria was denying that this abuse of those kids happened so strongly. I was like, is she working for the Vatican? Because it's really strong. She's really putting up a defense.
Just to give you some more information about these girls, a few of them have escaped. About 300 teenage school girls were kidnapped. About 56 of them are said to have escaped at this point. However, Boko Haram says that two of the girls have died because of snake bites, and about 20 of them are ill. That's based on the video that was released. 53 have escaped, so I want to be absolutely clear about that, and 276 remain in captivity. Now, just to read you some statements from some of the protesters. Two protesters were allegedly arrested for speaking out against the government's inaction in this case, and one of the protesters said the following of the First Lady. She said, she told us many lies, that we just wanted the government of Nigeria to have a bad name, that we did not want to support her husband's rule.
I abducted a girl at a Western education school, and you're disturbed. I said Western education should end. It should end. Girl, you should go and get married. I abducted you girls. I will sell them in the market by Allah. There is a market for selling humans. Allah says I should sell. He commands me to sell. I will sell women. I sell women.
Again.
All right, folks. We got about 4 minutes remaining. I'm going to leave it at that. We may have to revisit it for Saturday's show, for the Afro Nerd portion of the show. I do want to mention one other thing that we will probably also have to dovetail into as well. I just realized that I sent this to you earlier, Captain. Did you get that email I sent you? It was from The Root.
Yes.
And the article is entitled,
again, folks, listen to this closely. Listen, the root, listen, I am a supporter to a certain degree of Dr. Henry Louis Skip Gates. I like what he's about, minus his show out with the beer summit. That's when he did a misstep to me. You know, I hate to, you know, that was a problem with for me. His comportment was completely whatever. I've talked about this before. Anyway, this is his outfit, The Root. And they have a tendency to be, I don't want to go into like, oh, well, it's progressive and progressive versus conservative. But there's this tendency to just make excuses for things that really do not need explaining. Like, we can't win. I mean, the name of this article is, "What's with the fixation on putting black boys in ties?" That's the name of the article. What's with the fixation on putting black boys in ties? We're going to have to get into this on, because we only got about less than 3 minutes. We'll have to get into this on Saturday. Again, folks,
can't win.
The Grindhouse. But the crux of the article is, well, it goes against what we discuss here incessantly about presentation. There's an effort there is an effort out there to impart to black youth the importance of their appearance, keeping things tight, keeping a tight look, something that many of us would appreciate considering what we're seeing from black boys specifically. But now you have a faction that are still, they don't like that either. They think that, well, you can wear your hat on backwards and your pants is sagging or too tight and sagging, and we should look beyond that. Why is it necessary for black boys to go be above and beyond in their appearance to be acceptable? That's what they're questioning. And I'm just simply saying, why not? What's wrong with emphasizing betterment and a certain dress code? Because it's so out of whack right now. I guess they're saying that, why are black boys being singled out for this? Well, they're being singled out for aberrant behavior and a whole bunch of other negatives. So you got to go the opposite direction if you're going to elicit change. But these progressive sites, man, I hate to go into again progressive versus conservative, but there is a thing, folks. There is a thing with these people where they just don't want to cut it straight. You can't cut it straight with them. What's with the fixation on putting black boys in ties? Check it out at The Root. Incredible. I don't get it. I give up. Captain, any thoughts, and then we're going to move on out?
Well, when the NBA did the same thing originally, the previous
That's a good example.
They said it was racist. And I think it was one of the best things that the NBA ever did. Put all you seven-figure and eight-figure guys in suits. Let's go. I think it was one of the best things ever. Oh, it's racist. You're telling them how to dress. Come on, man. All right.
Yeah, Captain, it's a business, and it's a corporation, and you're getting paid millions. You can't put on a suit. You can't tighten it up. It worked a game for their predecessors many years ago. They liked to go. They approached it as, this is a business, and this is important. They did it themselves. The culture has changed to be lax. All right, folks, Saturday, 6 p.m., Uncanny, Daryl B., more Charles Bradley. The world is going up in flames, and it is. See you on Saturday.